Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. As we gear up for award season, there's no better time to join us. By becoming a Vanity Fair subscriber, you'll gain exclusive access to our in-depth coverage of film, television, and the best of Hollywood. And that's just the beginning. Vanity Fair takes you inside the worlds of entertainment, culture, politics, and scandal, bringing you iconic images, era-defining stories, and much more. Get 15% off a year of digital access to Vanity Fair by visiting vanityfair.com and using promo code POD15 at checkout. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a full year of insights and exclusive digital access. Subscribe now.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
It's such an honor to present this next award.
And here are the nominees.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
And I can't deny the fact that you like me right now. You like me.
I'm the king of the world.
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
I am Katie Rich, and I'm here on Emmy Nominations Day with my usual crew of David Canfield.
Hello.
Rebecca Ford.
Hi.
And Richard Lawson.
Hello.
I changed up the order. I don't know. Emmys have really thrown me off.
Well, this is their award. This is awards. I mean, this is David and Rebecca's time to get primacy, I think, for sure.
This is where we all just start number crunching and trying to figure out how anything has happened the way that it did. We have a lot of Emmy nominations to discuss and a lot of snubs to discuss, which was inevitable in some way. To start with the top line, Succession led the nomination total with 25, followed by Ted Lasso and White Lotus, which tied at 20. All of which I think were expected heavy hitters going into this, though I think the extent to which Succession and Ted Lasso and Hacks kind of held on to their supremacy surprised me a little bit. Oh, where do I even start? That's my surprise. Who wants to go with their next surprise from what was on here? Either a snub or something that succeeded more than you expected.
I'm really excited for Abbott Elementary.
I knew you'd say that.
This is something I talked about in our, you know, last episode where we were pushing for the shows and the performances we wanted to highlight. And you know, obviously, I think we felt pretty secure that it was going to get in for comedy series. But to see, you know, so many of the actors get nominated, I just think is really exciting because they do such great work. And I feel like sometimes, you know, on a sort of ensemble sitcom like that, they wouldn't get that kind of attention. So, you know, to see Quinta, but also Shara Lee Ralph and Janelle James get nominated is just really, really cool.
Or even Tyler James Williams, who I think, you know, as far as I can tell, like the only major male role on the show. And I think it's in the supporting acting nominations like that, or like Ted Lasso showing up for Toheeb Jimo. Like, that's when you know a show is really beloved, when it gets surprising nominations like that.
And he's been working in sitcoms since he was like four. So congratulations.
I am going to pull up his IMDb right now. All right, David, pleasant surprise from you then.
Pleasant surprise. I wasn't nominated for limited series, which is a really messy category, but Station 11 got 7 nominations and I was expecting far fewer. If I had my way, would probably win that category. And seeing Himesh Patel get in for Best Actor over many Oscar winners was a really delightful surprise for me. You know, it's not the showiest performance, but it's just such a lovely, subtle, really affecting anchor for that show. It also got in for both writing and directing. So there was definitely a lot of support for it. And you have to think it came up close against the likes of Pam and Tommy and Inventing Anna, which were the populist choices, let's say. I was also really thrilled for Abbott Elementary. I think The White Lotus is definitely overkill, but seeing actors like Natasha Rothwell cited alongside Jennifer Coolidge and Connie Britton and Alexander Daddario, who I think is really underrated in that show too. Nominations for everybody in White Lotus. Why not? They're all great. Yeah. And, you know, it is nice to see several actors who had really great years beyond The White Lotus. Sydney Sweeney also nominated for that and Euphoria, get those mentions because they did have a great year and they were great in that show. So I have no complaints.
8 actors from The White Lotus were nominated. 8. Whew. Including 5 actresses, which is, you would be worried about them if Jennifer Coolidge wasn't such a runaway favorite in there. Like, they're all going to lose to her, which is fine. But man, that is spreading the will.
Well, the other two are both from Dope Sick, so they're going to split too. It's it's literally 2 shows in that category.
Richard, I want to get into the limited series mess, but why don't you throw in a pleasant surprise first?
Oh, I like to see I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson getting in the short form categories for his performance and for the show overall. That's exciting. Fun to see RuPaul's Drag Race Untucked in a reality category. Selling Sunset is now an Emmy nominee. I don't know if that happened with past seasons, but
as was predicted in the prophecy, right?
Yeah, I don't watch that show, but I just think it's interesting to see the Emmys in at least some cases turning toward populism and saying, yeah, sure, come on to the party, whereas they kind of rejected that elsewhere. I mean, it's interesting that Selling Sunset is nominated at these Emmys, but I believe This Is Us is not.
This Is Us is not.
Yeah.
For nothing. No categories for This Is Us.
I think it has one nomination.
It does.
On the list.
Outstanding original music and lyrics. I'm just looking it up. Same with Yellowstone, which we were talking about a little bit before we started recording, but, you know, much discussed, most popular show in America. I didn't necessarily expect it to, like, clean up, although I think we discussed it, but for it to get nothing at all, not surprised me.
Yeah, that really does have zero. I think it was a bit of misplaced confidence in a show that just isn't reaching the Television Academy demographic voting body. It never has. It was extremely popular 2 years ago. It's extremely popular now. And I do think it's had some crossover appeal in this past season. But overall, yeah, it's not landing with these voters. And it probably never will because it was a really big campaign this season.
Yeah. I mean, David, you're doing some kind of psychoanalysis of the voters and what they had time to watch and didn't while talking about the limited series race. So let's jump back to that, because in some ways it's like the most visible Emmy race, at least when, you know, it's us and every week there's some new show to discuss. And we knew it was going to be a bloodbath with all of these huge shows that premiered in the spring, which you've also discussed. But like, how did that all shake out? How does We Crashed get nothing, David? How did this happen?
It was definitely a case of too much. I mean, all of those April, May premieres underperformed at best. Under the Banner of Heaven has 1 nomination for Andrew Garfield. The Staircase has 2 nominations for Toni Collette and Colin Firth. The First Lady, which was another April premiere, underperformed. Gaslit underperformed. We Crash underperformed. Whereas shows that premiered earlier, like Pam and Tommy and Inventing Anna, both were more broad appealing to begin with, if not as well reviewed, but also premiered earlier and had more time to find their audience, and premiered before there were 10 limited series streaming at the same time, which, shocker, is not the best strategy for finding an audience. And I think that was clearer this year than I've ever seen it before. It felt that way for us watching, like as regular viewers. And so it makes sense that that would be the same case for the Television Academy. I mean, even Sarah Paulson getting nominated for impeachment, you know, that was a fall show that had a lot of time. It wasn't very, you know, widely watched at the time, but there are all these little indications that shows that aired earlier had more time to stick with Emmy voters. So I think that the spring glut did not pay off.
Yeah, or even Candy, which we discussed on the show and on Still Watching, which got 1 nomination for main title design, which were very good,
I would say. They were very good.
Rebecca, what do you think about how the limited series category shook out?
I mean, I feel like we always knew this was going to be, there were going to be a lot of losers just because it was, there's just so much this year. It feels like more than ever. And I think we've been saying that for the last few years. But I like a lot of what David is saying when it comes to the theory. And I will also read his piece when it's up. But to me, the Inventing Anna of it all is the most curious thing to me. But I don't have the answer as to why.
I think most galling about the Inventing Anna thing is that it was nominated for Outstanding Depiction of How a Magazine Works.
And we lobbied against that category entirely.
Yeah, I mean, and it's the only nominee. So it's kind of probably going to win.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Okay, so Richard, Inventing Anna feels like a real feather in the cap for Netflix in some ways, which did pretty well, I think. It gets Stranger Things in there in drama series. The Squid Game, obviously, and Ozark are still huge. Do you think that there's like a single network or streamer or anyone who really has the most bragging rights today?
HBO.
Yeah.
As usual.
I mean, 14 acting nominations for Succession.
14?
Yeah, because that's guest actors and supporting and lead. And I mean, imagine being the 15th. I don't know who that would be.
But, Dasha from Red Scare, right?
Yeah, well, I'm not upset for her. But but yeah, I think HBO, you know, that they're doing comedy successfully. They're doing drama successfully. I mean, they have Hacks and Barry on two different, you know, one is HBO Normal and the other's Max. Station 11. I mean, The Staircase getting a couple, that's great. Obviously, White Lotus with 20 nominations. Like, HBO is just doing this better than everyone else at this moment.
Mm. I mean, if I had to pick a second place, I think it has to be Hulu. Like, looking at just, you know, looking at this document where it has it by network and seeing that huge list for Pam and Tommy, and then also Dope Sick, and then also Only Murders in the Building, and The Great, which did pretty well. Like, that's a big haul for, you know, a company that is owned by Disney, and you don't know what's on Hulu and what's on FX. Like, they're doing pretty well.
Yeah, and those are all their own programs. Abbott Elementary was watched by a lot of people on Hulu. So was What We Do in the Shadows. I would say most of its audience is probably Hulu. Banner of Heaven, which was nominated for Andrew Garfield, is, I think, technically also a Hulu show. It's only airs on Hulu.
It's listed under FX, but as usual with FX and Hulu, the line between them is very fuzzy for the rest of us.
Yes, it's hard for me to keep track.
The Great is interesting because one of the stories from 2020 was that show, which got a lot of good reviews and stuff, only got two nominations for writing and directing, nothing for the performers. And now for season two, they have them. And so clearly something about Hulu's campaigning insisted it into the sort of toward the top of the viewing pile for enough voters, you know, and maybe the same is true. I mean, Pam and Tommy, I think that to me is weird because I don't think that's a very good show. I think the performances are good, but I think that in addition to Hulu campaign success, I think it's also that story, obviously, for a certain age of voter probably feels recent enough to feel very relevant and like, oh yeah, let's revisit that weird thing that was adjacent to our industry or overlapping some with our industry that really, as the show, I think, struggles to kind of argue in a compelling way, helped change the game of everything surrounding everyone who's voting for this thing, everyone in the industry, what fame is, how fame manifests. Like, I can see Pam and Tommy having that relevance, and I'm sure that Hulu did a good job of communicating that somehow, even just beyond the text of the show, to the voters.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, it makes me wonder about the our true crime boom that we talked about so much with all those spring shows. Like, is that over before it began? Like, it's not as relevant to voters as this other stuff?
It clearly didn't land, right? I mean, I think it's interesting that even The Dropout, you know, it did get into limited series, and Amanda Seyfried will almost surely win that Best Actress category, but you know, they nominated Seth Rogen for Pam and Tommy over Naveen Andrews for The Dropout.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, to me, says a lot about the standing of those two shows. Pam and Tommy has more nominations overall, and it got in a lot of key areas where I thought The Dropout would, but it didn't. So, yeah, the tech shows mostly underperformed, as did the true crime shows.
What if Julia Garner is now this, like, dark horse contender for Actress in a Limited Series or Movie because of how much they love Inventing Anna? You never know what's going to happen.
Fair question.
Rebecca, you talked about Abbott Elementary as kind of this bright, shining light in the comedy thing. I mean, I think we could see how competitive the comedy categories are. Like, in the Best Actress category, where Selena Gomez was this surprising snub. Like, do you think it's just going to be Ted Lasso and Hacks all over again? Or has the landscape changed now that we know the nominees?
It does feel like Ted Lasso is unbeatable, doesn't it, at a certain point? And, you know, it comes in with 20 nominations. It just feels like totally unbeatable. I mean, I would love to see a surprise. There's so many good shows in this category, but I feel like I would back Ted Lasso if I was a betting woman right now.
David, what happened with Julia? How did that just strike out in comedy? We were so high on it.
Maybe just one too many HBO contenders. I also think it's a really nice, gentle show. It doesn't do a lot to stand out or make itself known. And you need to be flashy, I think, to get Emmy nominations increasingly. Mm-hmm. I am pretty shocked that Hacks managed 17 nominations for season two. It just, you know, it was well reviewed, but it just felt a lot quieter coming in. I think that's definitely affirms that Jean Smart is unbeatable.
Hopefully
we don't have a complete repeat in the comedy categories. I mean, Only Murders did get 17 nominations, which is a pretty huge haul for a first-year show. Mm-hmm. So it's also really well-positioned because it's airing a very well-received second season right now that's quite popular. So that would be the one I would look to spoil. I just can't see Hacks doing even as well as it did last year. It won both writing and directing. I don't think that that will happen again.
Yeah.
The other network we should probably talk about is Apple. I mean, they did get Ted Lasso, but Severance also got 14 nominations, which is the same as Squid Game got. I don't think any of us would have expected that before today.
Yeah, I mean, getting those two supporting nominations for John Turturro and Christopher Walken, like, that's a really nice surprise and also indication of how much that show succeeded.
Yeah.
And I do think, when we're talking about Apple, for phase two now, they have one comedy series and one drama series they have to push. Whereas, you know, HBO is juggling Hacks and Barry and Curb in comedy and Euphoria and Succession and drama. So
And White Lotus.
Like, so I think Apple, you know, I'm bummed that Pachinko did not get in. But when we're looking at what's going to happen in the next, you know, month or two, I think Apple being able to sort of focus its efforts will probably benefit it.
But Rebecca, The Morning Show has three major acting nominations.
Oh, excuse me. I somehow forgot The Morning Show.
The longevity of the stereotype of the Emmys for so long was just like they keep nominating the same things over and over again. And I think they have proven that wrong plenty of times. And there's lots of new stuff in here. But then you see stuff like The Morning Show, like, staying relatively strong. You're like, maybe there is a point where if you're in the club, you never get out.
They also made weird choices on The Morning Show, though. Like, they dropped Jennifer Aniston and nominated Reese Witherspoon instead.
Yeah.
I felt like Julianna Margulies was probably the buzziest supporting performance. They didn't nominate that, but they kept Billy Crudup in. I don't understand how The Morning Show performs at the Emmys at all, ever.
Yeah, they nominated Marcia Gay Harden, right?
Yeah, and that one I get. I mean, she's an Oscar Tony winner who gets a fun, kind of villainous role in a show that they clearly watch. So that makes sense to me. I expected her to be nominated.
Yeah, I had to do our guest actress on a drama series predictions, and it was so freaking hard. Like, I picked three people from Succession, which was the right thing to do, and then beyond that, there's just no telling.
I think with The Morning Show, it's like a messy show is reflected in messy nominations, you know? It's like chaos. Here you go.
That's it.
God, speaking of messy, how did Jodie Comer and Sandra Oh get nominated again for, like, one of the most reviled season finales I can remember?
And over Mandy Moore for a very well-received final season.
Yeah. Like, is that a box-checking kind of thing where you remember that you like them and you just go for it?
I think so. I mean, the Emmys nominating process is they have an unlimited ballot. You can check off as many people as you want. And that, to me, is the only explanation for how both of those actresses could make it in here.
Does that mean? Like, when you have your ballot, you don't have to pick, like, a certain number? You just check off everyone you like?
Correct.
Why?
TV is friendlier than film. That's what it is. They're like, everyone
gets invited.
That's why you have five White Lotus and two Dopesick actresses making up the entirety of the supporting actress category for
that's
limited.
Wild. I mean, then you can, like, you run into someone, you're like, I voted for you. You don't have to lie about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a bizarre system, but I do think that you probably have a situation where if you're voting for one, you're voting for the other. Mm-hmm. And there were evidently enough people who did that. I mean, I think it's kind of a shame, too, that Severance could get so many actors nominated, but Britt Lauer couldn't break in over them.
Yeah.
For a lead actress. You know, the Emmys always have those weird balances between inspired nominations and really tired, overdone ones. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do feel like, you know, looking at the drama category, you have 35 nominations between Yellow Jackets, Severance, and Squid Game, which are all new shows. That's pretty significant. That feels like a larger haul for drama freshmen than what they usually do. So, you know, there are indications that they definitely en masse watched some of the new stuff and really embraced that.
Yeah, I was struck that Yellow Jackets got 2 writing nominations. I think it's the only show that did. That's an impressive show of how strong it is. And we can all pause to celebrate Melanie Lynskey, who we've, you know, praised endlessly on this show. But getting that, her nomination was expected, but was a real thrill to see in that lineup.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't watch Better Call Saul, but I got enough wind of it that I knew that Rhea Seehorn was really the cause celeb, David, I think from you largely. So seeing her get nominated and supporting actress in a drama series was great. But then I was stunned that Sarah Goldberg over in comedy did not make it in. And that just has to be some weird, like, quirk of the ballot thing. Like, she was such a standout in this season of Barry, and Barry got so many nominations. That's such, like, what a painful, weird accident.
Yeah, I remember thinking at the beginning of the season she probably wouldn't come back, but it felt like by the end she had such incredible material. She was so good, and the show was clearly such a hit that I didn't see how she could miss. But it does seem like, you know, they wanted to make room for Sarah Niles for Ted Lasso, evidently. She's the third Ted Lasso actress in that category, which I'm happy about. I thought she was one of my favorite parts of the new season. Abbott Elementary, they went for both Janelle James and Cheryl Lee Ralph, which was a bit of a surprise. Again, thrilled to see that. And then you have Alex Borstein, Hannah Einbinder, Kate McKinnon, Hannah Waddingham, and Juno Temple, who you knew would be nominated. And so, yeah, I think it was a really competitive category. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, there just wasn't the passion there that evidently there was for those other performances, or maybe just for shows. I think clearly Ted Lasso and Abbott Elementary were favorites for this acting branch overall.
Is it possible, given Sarah Goldberg's arc on this season of Barry, where her character gets the dream opportunities she's always wanted and then they fall apart, partly because of a shift in her temperament, mostly because of other outside things, but like the way that character, and so brilliantly played, is a study in like genuine, earnest ambition and pure intent commingling pretty badly with vanity. Maybe people in the Academy were like, I don't like to see me. That's not good. I don't think that's probably what happened, but like, you know, you never know.
It's pretty raw. Like, even if you're not in the industry, I think you can watch her and like see enough of the worst parts of yourself, which is such a testament to how great that performance is. But you might have a point, Richard.
Oh, I mean, I will defend the importance of criticism up to the point that I'm reading Goodreads reviews of my book. You know, then these people are just, you know, they don't know anything, and why would they say anything if it was negative? So like, I think that like confronting the contradictions of being a creative person in a highly charged industry like television, which is where Sarah Goldberg's character heads in Barry, maybe something was a little too close to the bone.
Yeah, I think so. And she could also be a victim of the fact that Barry often doesn't feel like a comedy. And in this race especially, you have a lot of broadly comic performances. And clearly that was favored.
As I look at the comedy category in general, and the guest actor in a comedy series category is so confusing, because you read Gerard Carmichael for Saturday Night Live, not for Roth Annual, which maybe we can talk about more, David, where it was nominated. Bill Hader for Curb Your Enthusiasm. And then it's just all Ted Lasso, Only Murders in the Building, and Hacks. I had to look up James Lance for Ted Lasso because that name wasn't familiar. He plays Trent Crim. Like, that's how much Ted Lasso was beloved this year. And then Sam Richardson for, I think, a pretty funny role, but like very small appearance at the end of it. That is the Ted Lasso power, that all of these people are on there. And then Harriet Walter getting nominated for Ted Lasso and also Succession, because, you know, she's Harriet Walter. She can do it.
Double nominee like Sydney Sweeney.
I saw your tweet, Richard.
Oh, that Harriet Walter and Sidney Sweeney are counterparts?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the British and American versions.
Yeah, I've always thought of them that way. Yeah.
Is Sidney Sweeney who we thought from the success or from the Euphoria supporting cast would get the nomination this year? Because I didn't feel like she was the breakthrough I heard as much about.
That bathroom scene was
I think she was. Yeah. I think she was.
Yeah, okay. That bathroom scene was so memed and passed around. And I think that what was written for her character in this season of Euphoria was kind of appalling. Like, she just lost all humanity, kind of, I think, in the show's view of her. But it was a good performance, and it was a big standout performance, you know, so.
So, David, what happened with Rathaniel? Drag Carmichael is an Emmy nominee several times over, so we can celebrate that. But how does Dave Chappelle's like Netflix walkout inspiring special get nominated instead?
I have no answer for that. I'm taking it slightly personally. I mean, it is bizarre to me that it wasn't, just because of comedy specials, particularly in 2022. It was the far and away breakout, and usually those do get nominated here. He was nominated for writing. Bo Burnham was nominated for directing, so it got, you know, everything but the main category. And Gerard was also nominated for SNL. He's the only SNL host nominated for guest acting, which feels
usually
like...
Usually you get like three or four.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought he was great, but I also wouldn't have said he was the best host of the season. So it's quite curious, and it almost feels deliberate because he shows up everywhere but the main category. Yeah, I think that there should be a lot of scrutiny over that Dave Chappelle nomination, given that he was not nominated in that category, because, you know, both were pretty widely watched, I think it's safe to say. And it's curious why one would be nominated over the other.
When you look at the variety special pre-recorded category, it makes me wonder if this category should exist, because it's such a strange... It's Adele concert movie, Dave Chappelle, the Harry Potter reunion, a Norm Macdonald special, and then Evening with Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga. Like,
What?
Yeah, what is this category? Because, you know, then you get to the live version of it where it's like the Grammys and the Oscars. Actually, did the Oscars get nominated? Oh, no,
they did.
There's an opportunity to relive that night. So anyway, I wonder if like best comedy special is what should happen and make some more sense out of this category.
I think they need to rework the entirety of the variety categories at this point. I mean, they're having a lot of problems with sketch series, as we've talked about. It's the same two nominees once again, Black Lady Sketch Show and Saturday Night Live.
You want to do a quick explainer on why that is? It's something about the amount of eligible shows, right?
Yeah, there are only 8 shows submitted for consideration, and they have... you know, kind of a sliding scale on how many nominees there will be based on the amount of submissions. It's not a fixed number. And so as long as there's less than 10, last year it was 9, this year was 8, there will only be 2 nominees.
Yeah.
And they nixed the variety performer category, which is why you now have all the SNL actors mixed in with the series actors. You have, like you said, Katie, a variety special pre-recorded category that mixes concerts and comedy specials and... all kinds of things. And then even the late night category, they were only going to nominate 4 shows, and the showrunners had to petition the Television Academy to add a 5th slot again because there were less submissions, which is how Seth Meyers got nominated.
Which is great, because people have been lobbying for that for years.
But it just feels like each of these categories is either shapeless or kind of barren, and there's a way to recognize more of the work, because there's a lot of good work in the sketch series that just literally cannot be nominated because there isn't enough competition.
Yeah.
Feels like it should be reworked in some way, but I don't really know how.
Well, the continuing problem of television is that there's just too much of it, and trying, like, you know, expecting people to be snubbed from the Emmys is one thing, but there are creative ways to not like invent new categories to hand people awards, but like change your rules so that more stuff can get in there. It doesn't hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting when you bring up SNL, because a few years ago, I feel like the supporting actor and actress categories were just packed with SNL performers. And this year, we only have Bowen and Kate McKinnon that got nominated. So that feels like a real shift. And maybe that's because there are so many hit comedies right now. And also Ted Lasso takes up like half of each of these categories this year. So, but that's definitely an interesting switch.
I'm diving into two of my favorite recurring categories, which is outstanding narrator and voiceover performance. And
I didn't see narrator.
Let me give you the list of narrator. No, hang on. It's got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, David Attenborough, W. Kamau Bell, Lupita Nyong'o, and Barack Obama all in the mix against you. I don't know how you pick among those.
I don't think Barack Obama is losing that category.
All right, we're gonna take that prediction to the bank. And then in the character voiceover performance, where you get, you know, everything from Bridgerton to Big Mouth, both Chadwick Boseman and Jessica Walter got posthumous nominations, which is kind of lovely. And then F. Murray Abraham, Stanley Tucci, Jeffrey Wright, Julie Andrews, and Maya Rudolph round out the category.
Wow.
Also, the picture.
A rare Bridgerton nomination.
I know. Well, I mean, I do feel like Julie Andrews's voiceover in Bridgerton is a pretty essential element of it, and she's Julie Andrews.
Very worthy nomination.
Also, the picture of her on the Emmy site is from like Mary Poppins era, which is just really lovely to like see her.
And you'd never know any differently because it's just her voice.
I know.
The Laurie Metcalf picture looks on the Emmy's website, looks like it's like a promo still from Roseanne, like, you know, 25 years ago or something.
Wait, Laurie Metcalf, she didn't get nominated for The Dropout, right?
For Hacks.
Yeah. That's right.
Along with Harriet Sansom Harris, who was so good.
It's in a thrilling nomination, yeah. Truly.
Yeah, I mean, Hacks got 4 of the 6 guest actress category nominations.
I can honestly defend each of them. They had a stacked guest actress lineup on that ballot, and yeah. I'm not shocked that they all made it in.
The Caitlin Olsen thing seems like a little bit of a fudge in a way, because like I think of her as a cast member, but I know that she was
only in 1 or 2 this season.
What, is that right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess she was a bigger part in the first season, yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that one of the few things that they like actually attach numbers to in terms of like who's a guest and who's a actual supporting player?
Because Joan Cusack kept getting nominated for Shameless, and she was in every single episode for guest actress.
Well, Caitlin Olsen's only previous Emmy nomination was for Outstanding Actress in a Short Form Comedy or Drama Series for something called Flipped.
That was a Quibi show.
Oh, wow. So good for her. I feel like this is a long overdue Emmy nomination for her, then. I take it back. Hack's going to have as many nominations as it wants.
17, maybe a lot, but...
17. Talking about snubs, I'm just looking at the networks. Peacock only got nominations for Angeline, which, honestly, you know, good for them. But Girls 5 Eva, once again, cruelly snubbed, and even for songs, which is nuts. Any last snubs before we, I don't know, wrap up the Emmys for now, before we start talking about it again next week?
I think it's worth noting that the First Lady... which was designed to get Emmy nominations.
Yeah.
It did get 3 below the line, but you put it out in April. You had 3 movie stars, Emmy favorites / Oscar favorites at the helm, and didn't get anything. And that was expected, I think, given the reviews and ratings, but still quite a fall from the hope for that show.
Say what you will. But sometimes, at least in these awards voting bodies, the thing does actually have to be good.
Well, I think we mentioned Gaslit briefly at the beginning, but the fact that it got, you know, 4 technical nominations, and it's a freaking Julia Roberts TV show. I realize she made that Amazon series a couple years ago that also didn't really make a splash, but and I liked Gaslit, but it just, you know, even or Anne Hathaway and We Crash, like even massive, massive stars couldn't stand out.
Those type of performances are like the Oscar formula, right? The famous person playing a real person in the makeup and hair. And like, that still works in Oscar season, but it does feel like with Emmy season, that's not enough.
That's an interesting theory.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote in my review, my somewhat negative review of Gaslit, that like, had that been a really interesting 2.5-hour film, we would be having a very different conversation about it. Mm-hmm. I think that David is right. Primarily that it was just those shows were in that crazy blitz of April-ish and things were going to get lost. But I think also, like, and to Rebecca's point, like, TV is a different medium. I mean, I know that there's been a lot of talk about those lines blurring over the, you know, in recent years, but like, and obviously there are some performances here that were very, you know, Lily James, big transformation, all that kind of stuff. But something about We Crashed or Gaslit or whatever might have felt a little bit too much like homework or like vegetables. And they were like, you know, I can do that for a couple hours, but why am I going to sit with this for 6, 7, 8 hours, you know? And obviously Super Pumped was one of those shows too. And I think in a weird way, as much as there was stuff to like about, you know, plenty of the things that got pretty much blanks. I find it a little heartening that somewhere maybe some lines are being kind of reiterated in terms of that TV first movie thing.
I think you're dead on. I mean, you had the following Oscar winners competing for Best Actress: Renee Zellweger, Viola Davis, Julia Roberts, Jessica Chastain, who was also not nominated,
a
more recent nominee. And instead, they nominated Sarah Paulson for a show we didn't think anybody watched. I think you're dead on, Richard. I think that's really telling about what kind of choices they made in those categories.
As Julia Roberts said when she came out to the Tonys to present something, having had terrible reviews in her one Broadway performance in 3 Days of Rain. Well, I mean, she did more than one performance, but her one Broadway role. she looked at the audience, flashed that, you know, million-dollar smile and said, "You are all so talented." And it was her basically saying, "Sorry, I like carpetbagged in here and tried to do what you guys do." And I don't know, maybe some of that sentiment, people are like, there are TV actors still who need this recognition. You movie stars, go back to, you know, your thing.
Yeah, and you mentioned to me, Katie, the Toni Collette nomination, which actually is kind of interesting and curious. Because The Staircase truly got nothing else, and Colin Firth was the face of that show. He was more of a lead than she was.
Yeah.
I found that really interesting that they nominated her, given the competition in the category. And given that I think she is, you know, increasingly more known for her TV work, like Unbelievable, she won for United States of Tara.
Yeah.
It also feels in line with that a little bit to me.
I think there's other bias at work there too, in that, like, you know, famously a lot of Academy members have been attacked by owls. And so they saw themselves in that.
Speaking of Jessica Chastain, I did want to flag that her Eyes of Tammy Faye director, Michael Showalter, now an Emmy-nominated director. That is not the career turn I expected for the star of One Hot American Summer, but good for him.
Good for him. Deserved.
I mean, The Dropout got 2 directing nominations in limited series, which is just crazy, crazy deserved. And David, you were explaining to me how Mike White gets nominated for both writing and directing White Lotus with no episodes attached because he wrote and directed all of them, which is bananas.
This is back when Barry Levinson would direct an HBO movie and get nominated for it, mm-hmm. but it's not an episode, it's a movie. And so they used to make it that miniseries, before they were limited series, which always had one writer and one director, they would submit as movies, essentially. Mm-hmm. So it would not be for an episode, it would be for the whole thing. And so now that you don't have TV movies really competing at a series level, by the way, Ben Foster is so great in The Survivor, and that just never really had a shot because they won't nominate them anymore, and it's such a weird gray area.
The Survivor did get nominated in the TV movie category. Would you guys like the rest of the nominees in that category?
It's a funny lineup.
Chippendale Rescue Rangers, which is a really good movie that I liked a lot. Ray Donovan, the movie, which I didn't know happened. Reno 911, The Hunt for QAnon, which I also didn't know happened. And then Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas, a Roku original movie adaptation of an NBC show that has been canceled, right?
So, and No Fresh, by the way, which...
Right! Oh, my God!
Yeah.
Was a well-made movie
that got
a lot of buzz out of Sundance and missed out to Ray Donovan, the movie. I mean,
it doesn't bode well for Good Luck to You, Leo Grand next year, I'll tell you that.
If people were not aware of the Reno 911 movie, it is pretty funny. So I would recommend watching it.
Well, then that and Rescue Rangers. We can make some endorsement out of the movie category.
But how's Ray Donovan, the movie? We don't know.
No one knows.
No. No one will ever know.
Everyone's dad just checked off the movie.
Yeah, well, they're all going to go watch that and then complain about the Emmys not nominating Yellowstone.
Yes.
Well, I guess that does it for the nominations conversation. We'll have lots more Emmy conversations with nominees. There's a lot to get into in the coming weeks. The Emmys will be on September 12th, which, if you're keeping score, is during the Toronto Film Festival. So please pray for us and our sleep and our attention spans. But in the meantime, we got a lot of Emmy coverage on VanityFair.com. You can follow us on Twitter at LittleGoldMen and on our own. I am at Katie Rich and Richard.
Rylaws.
And David.
David Canfield, 97.
And Rebecca.
Rebecca M. Ford.
Also, please text us at joinsubtext.com/littlegoldmen or text 718-550-2059. Maybe we'll get into some of your burning Emmy questions next week. Our editor and producer is Brett Fuchs, and this week's award for what Brett swears he says to us at the end of every episode goes to Richard Lawson and Julia Roberts.
You are all so talented.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.